Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests on. In our first half, we're going to have Jason Watkins, and he's going to be talking about chaga, the king of herbs. And in the second half, we have Crystal Kennedy, Wildcraft Nation. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Turning the clocks ahead 1 hour in the spring and losing an hour of sleep increases the risk of fatal car crashes, new research shows. For the study, the researchers analyzed data on nearly 733 fatal car crashes that occurred between 1996 and 2017 in states that make the spring switch to daylight saving time. The risk of fatal crashes rose nearly 6% in the week after the switch and was especially high in the morning and in locations further west within a time zone, the investigators found. Over the 22 years studied, more than 626 fatal crashes might have been prevented by not switching to daylight saving time, according to the report published January 30th in the journal Current Biology. When a child has strep throat, an antibiotic like penicillin usually has them back at school 24 hours later. But a new study warns that strains of bacteria that cause strep throat and flesh-eating disease appear close to becoming resistant to penicillin and other antibiotics known as beta-lactams. Study lead author Dr. James Muser said if this germ becomes truly resistant to these antibiotics, it would have a very severe impact on millions of children around the world. He is the chair of pathology and genomic medicine at Houston Methodist Hospital. He added this is a very concerning but plausible notion based on our findings. The study was published online January 29th in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology. Whether you're stopping at a casual fast food place or sitting down to eat in a full-service restaurant, eating out is an easy way to fill up when you're hungry. But those meals may not deliver much nutritional value, a new study suggests. The researchers found that 70% of fast food meals consumed in the United States were of poor nutritional value. For full-service restaurants, around half of the meals were of poor nutritional value. Less than 0.1% of the restaurant meals analyzed during the entire study period from 2003 to 2016 were considered to be of ideal nutritional value. The study was published January 29th in the Journal of Nutrition. Diagnosing lung emergencies caused by vaping can be a challenge because symptoms can look like pneumonia or go unrecognized, according to a new case report. The vaping illness known as EVALI, electronic cigarette or vaping associated lung injury, has so far killed nearly 60 people in the United States. More than 2,600 have been hospitalized. Lead author Dr. Caitlin Works said electronic cigarettes and vaping products are sending thousands of smokers, especially teens, to emergency departments. She's an emergency medicine physician with Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville. She said, "We must be crystal clear with young people. E-cigarettes and vaping products are not a healthy alternative to smoking." The new analysis was published online January 15th in the Journal of the American College of Emergency Physicians, Open.
We have Jason Watkins with us today, and he's a passionate speaker trained in pathophysiology and pharmacology, nutrition, and traditional Chinese medicine. What makes for a gripping presentation style is that he's also completed formal studies and meditative yogic practice in the Indo-Tibetan tradition. His intent is to share modern and ancient wisdom to get to the root of what makes us unwell and how to really recover full well-being. So we'd sure like to welcome you to the show, Jason. It's great to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So what we're going to talk about chaga, I know that you're a wealth of information on many, many different mushrooms, but let's start with chaga. It's often been regarded as the king of herbs, and I know a lot of the research began in China, in Russia. Can you just tell us a little bit about why, how they've used it for centuries and what they've found?
Yeah, I think one of the things that really grabs people is the idea that they found it on the frozen ice sheet mummy that's from probably around 3400 BC in the Australian Alps region, and that fellow was actually carrying chaga. And they think they used chaga in ancient times. They still can use it today. Some of the different mushrooms, you can they light up really well to start a fire, so they can actually carry fire to different regions by lighting the chaga. And in more, what really grabs me even more than that is that since ancient times in the northern regions, like you said, in Siberia and different parts in the Scandinavian countries, the shamans still to this day can utilize the chaga mushroom when they are working with someone, trying to kind of blow your mind either with, you know, psychedelics or powerful sounds or scary, just trying to get you out of your stressed mindset and open your mind. But a lot of people would freak out because they're not used to that open mindset, so they would give them chaga to really take them down and help them relax. And the Soviet Union did a lot of research because they didn't really want to depend on the pharmaceutical companies, obviously, because they were of the West. And so they're doing a lot of research with electromagnetic pulse frequencies because they were at that time working with, you know, salamanders and different amphibious creatures that can regenerate limbs. So I'm anticipating maybe they thought that they could help regenerate limbs and things like that for healing, but they utilized electromagnetic pulsing, and also they used different medicinal mushrooms and other what they're called adaptogenic herbal compounds like rhodiola and ginseng, and they found that the things that help you adapt the best to stress, either physical, emotional, psychological stress, are the mushrooms. And in particular, chaga, interestingly enough, had been used for you know, maybe thousands of years, obviously, according to the ice sheet mummy, was the best overall. And then they kept that secret from us for a very long time. And then once the Soviet Union fell, all this information on mushrooms is coming out in Western scientific terms instead of more of the Eastern, which is more an intuitive type of language, but not necessarily very familiar to us. So now we're hearing about all the mushrooms now over the last few years, mm-hmm. and it's very exciting, as you know,
yes.
because they're very powerful.
Jason, when were you first introduced to chaga? Is that the first mushroom you came into contact with?
There was a few mushrooms. I was in the 1980s. I was in university in microbiology, and my teacher was a microbiologist and a mycologist, and he kind of blew our minds with mushrooms because at that point, mushrooms were being kind of challenged that they're not really a non-vascular plant. They have different properties. For instance, plants have a cell wall, and mushrooms have peptidoglycan, more like an animal structure. Plants conserve their sugars as starch, whereas we have glycogen. Mushrooms have glycogen. They also produce neurotransmitters, unlike plants, that affect all the creatures and everything in their outer environment. But yes, chaga was one of the first ones, and my teacher was talking about chaga and a few other mushrooms that when they did work on labs in faraway places, vacuum-sealed labs, if they challenged or did something to one mushroom, that its clone would actually react miles away in a sealed lab by producing the same compound. So it really blew our minds because we're in mainstream university, and here they're telling us that somehow, that miles away in a sealed lab, that this was communicating with the other clone. So that grabs you, but then the teacher just moves on because they're not really supposed to teach things like that are outside of science.
Right.
But he said enough to really tweak, and that was, I think, 1988. So ever since then, it planted a seed in me, and obviously, there's a few mushrooms that are much more powerful, and chaga is one of them. And it, like you say, it's a, such a powerful history. It is one of them that's referred to as the king. I mean, in other countries, the cordyceps is considered the king, so they kind of share that title. And they're both amazing, especially for stress and energy and things like that.
Hmm. With chaga, I know in the Northern Hemisphere, it's generally found in nature in conchs growing on birch trees. What's the relationship between the birch tree and the chaga?
That's quite fascinating because mushrooms overall, they seem to share their immune system with surrounding plants. So for instance, in trees, under the ground, all the rhizomal little rooting structures, they tap into the mycelia or rooting structures of the different mushrooms, and the mushroom shares their immune system. In the case of birch, with a conch, it's growing into the birch in the trunk, and it's sharing its immune system with birch. It often tends to grow on a tree that has an issue. In other words, it is a tree that could end up dying or it's diseased.
Mm-hmm.
So the chaga will grow into that tree, and the birch bark will share a lot of its fiber, and it will form a fibrous mass of birch bark and the chaga, and then the chaga is infusing it with its immune system. So it's in effect, it's keeping it alive. And that is one issue that brings up, too, is that if you harvest the wild too much, you end up killing a lot of birch trees. And David Wolfe, one of the guys that's really been a staunch supporter of mm-hmm. chaga, he noticed that when he was harvesting some of the chaga, that the birch trees were dying. So things that you have to be careful with over-harvesting, but yeah, it's quite fascinating how it's sharing its support.
Wow, yeah, it's really a healer. And there is a certain time of year, you only want to do it when the sap is down from the birch tree?
Yes.
So that it is dormant at the time.
Absolutely, and then it's interesting too, because when you are doing that, you're also keeping a lower microbe count. So in other words, all these different mushrooms and everything, they trap molds and yeast and spores of other organisms in the air. So if you harvest them in really cold temps, you actually minimize how many of the other organisms are competing with it. So you're getting more of a pure chaga element to take for you. So it's actually more beneficial in many ways to harvest when it's really cold.
Mm-hmm. And so it's more nutritive as well, or it's just better for that birch tree?
For the birch tree, but also there's a high nutrient level, and obviously with chaga, it's the antioxidant properties are key. And when you're anything in a storage kind of cycle, they produce different types of compounds. So yeah, you're getting the overall benefits are increased when you harvest at that certain time because they're in more of a storage mode.
Mm. And now we know from the Western approach that we can find sterols and phenols, beta-glucan. There's other really, really interesting nutrients there for balancing immune systems. Does it equate to the folklore and the history of long ago?
You're talking about, so the science today is kind of...
Science, does it match up with a lot of things that have been said pre-science?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting because a lot of times people don't maybe realize that science is actually in the process of validating what they're already using it for traditionally in these ancient traditional medicines, the shamanic medicines or the local folklore medicines or Chinese medicine, Tibetan medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, or the ancient Western medicines. They used them because they worked for certain things, and so they would continue to use them and refine them. And then science wants to try to validate why they work, and then the biophysical process of why it's working. And this is kind of the difficult part of mushrooms because there's so many different compounds in a mushroom that are synergistic. In other words, they're working together. And when they get in the system, it's not just one mechanism. Say, for instance, you're using reishi or chaga to try to treat blood pressure. It's not just, say, a polysaccharide function or a triterpene function. It could be a lot of the extracellular compounds that are affecting your nervous system, which then calms your endocrine system, and the whole idea of lowering the blood pressure comes out of that. So that's the tricky part with mushrooms. Just because there are so many compounds, you don't know which one's having an effect. And then if you try to take compounds out, it doesn't have the same effect. So I find that the adaptogenic class, which mushrooms are part of, when they're trying to rebalance your system, it makes it trickier for science, but it also gives some data definitely to support it. Because like you were just saying, it definitely has indications that it does work on the same mechanisms that science is typically looking for in a drug, but it does so much more. And that's the key thing that I'm looking at, is all the other things that a mushroom is doing, especially about trying to get your body out of the sympathetic or stress mode and more into the parasympathetic or non-stressed mode, which is obviously ideal for healing. And I think that's key for mushrooms, is mm-hmm. that they're helping you get out of that mode. And when you get out of that stress mode and into the parasympathetic mode, the immune system is optimized. And many of the benefits might not be direct on the immune system. They may be more indirect, but more powerful by supporting a non-stress state.
So they would actually work just as well as the herbs that we would use as adaptogens, or would we put the adaptogen herbs with the mushrooms for maximum effect?
So the strongest effects that the Soviets found, like I said, when they were testing all of the different adaptogens and drugs and things like that, the mushrooms were the most powerful adaptogens. They're more powerful than rhodiola, more powerful than ginsengs and things like that. So I'd say if you want to take one thing, mushrooms alone. If you want to mix other adaptogens with it, I think that's great too. And we've done that in products of ours. We put the ashwagandha with different mushrooms just because then you're mixing also different ancient medicines, the top of the heap. For instance, in Ayurvedic, is ashwagandha. Then in the Chinese and Tibetan, it's the mushrooms, but also you could pull in ginsengs. So yeah, I think that's great to mix them because they all have slightly different effects in the body.
Yes, yes. Jason, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how chaga is grown in labs now.